Hello, this is Chris Yerkes reading to you from the May 28th edition of the County Chronicle. We'll start with the first page stories. Tuscola School Board, Tending to Years and Business Matters by Ben Crane. The Tuscola School Board met on Thursday last week in light of Monday, Memorial Day, and attended to routine end-of-year agenda items. First up on the docket was approving their Illinois Association of School Boards membership in the amount of $4,800 before raising their lunch fees by 10 cents. The board also approved the waiver of all student fees except for athletic, dual credit, tech insurance, and driver's ed fees. The 2024-25 amended budget was approved, as well as the board set a budget hearing for the date of their next meeting. Their agreement with Gould Bus Service was extended, seeing an 8.9% increase to $775,000, as well as their property work, compensation, and student accident renewal in the amount of $220,000, which was a reported decrease. At North Ward, Superintendent Gary Alexander reported that last quarter events were a success and thanked the North Ward community for stepping in whenever needed to help all students have a successful end of the school year experience. Jared Van Osdell also thanked students, parents, staff, the board, and community members for a successful year in the East Prairie report. He noted that the boys and girls track teams had successful seasons and congratulated the district for hosting a successful junior high sectional meet. Van Osdell also noted that Mackenzie Markle in fifth grade, Harrison Dunn in sixth, Evan Reifstack in seventh, and Linus Goodman in eighth were named April Students of the Month. TCHS Principal Justin Bozarth congratulated seniors who received awards and the valedictorians and co-salutatorians. The resignation of Nick Bradshaw as North Ward PE teacher, Beth Pugh as prom sponsor, and Michelle Thurber as paraprofessionals were accepted. The hirings of Brian Thomas as junior high softball assistant, Marissa Russo as TCHS girls basketball volunteer, Mike Haste as fifth grade teacher, Daisy Mast as East Prairie paraprofessional, and Aja Bozarth as prom sponsor were all accepted. The next article, Arthur Village Board, approve increases for grass and weed fines by Ariana Cherry. The Arthur Village Board of Trustees held its most recent meeting on Monday, May 19th. Ordinance 0519C-2025, amending Section 20-2 of the Village Code, was approved to increase the fine for grass and weed nuisances. The new policy will charge the property owner for the village's cost of the work, with an additional $100 fine after the first offense, resulting in a $200 fine plus the cost of work into subsequent violations. The board also addressed and improved an ordinance concerning a perpetual easement on village-owned property known as the Wireless Tower Site. Ordinance 05-19B-2025 authorizes this easement for as long as the property is used as a wireless telecommunication facility with the option for assignment. The sale price for the easement is $220,000, and the village agrees not to license or lease the property to any other entity within a 100 by 100 section while retaining rights to the remainder of the property. Other items discussed and voted on. An update was provided for the TIF construction grant request for the property at 210 South Vine Street. This ongoing project has seen approximately $38,000 of the potential $75,000 on a 50-50 basis already paid by the village. Concerns were raised about the structural integrity of the roof and deck, although the new wood for the project is already at the property, the grant was approved. Discussed and approved a request from Oye's Hardware to close the street east of their store on Saturday, June 28th during the Freedom Festival Parade to celebrate their 40th anniversary. Economic development grant request by Simply Arthur in the amount of $36,000 was approved to help defray the annual cost of a full-time employee at the Welcome Center and $5,000 for the regular cleaning of the Welcome Center over the year. Village President Rod Randall discussed an electrical aggregation letter highlighting Ameren's rates are currently cheaper than Homefield's with a May 30th deadline to opt out. Rod Randall also assured residents that they can continue to receive paper water bills and pay at Village Hall despite the new option to view and pay bills online. Police Chief Elliot Tinnen reported on preparations for the firework assistance, an unexpected water pump repair needed for an old police truck, and the resolution of several burglary cases with an arrest made. Public Works Director Grant Corum mentioned the seeding of the lot across from the Public Works facility and the planned concrete replacement on downtown alleys, weather permitting. Trustee Christy Burnius thanked workers for their efforts at the Strawberry Festival, and Trustee Matt Burnius congratulated the ALAH Junior High Boys Track Team for their second place finish at the IESA State Meet. Trustee Kurt Hall noted inquiries about hydrant flushing, which is estimated to begin in June. The next article from the Arthur School Board: to get final payment for transportation by Ariana Cherry. We're going to receive a final transportation payment this fiscal year. It's in the queue, stated Superintendent Shannon Cheek at the meeting of the Arthur CUSD No. 305 School Board held on May 21st. There are many years where we get three payments. We don't get the full amount every year. It has still been an ongoing issue, informed Cheek as she spoke about the deficit of the transportation fund is frequently due not to receiving payments from the state. We budget conservatively and always budget for three payments, he explained. With the transportation fund continuing to be an ongoing issue for the district, the board voted to approve a resolution authorizing abatement of working cash funds and transfer to the transportation fund. As mental health continues to gather more awareness, the district has continued to add more access for its students. Piatt County Health Department passed a referendum that allows them to have additional funds for mental health. As a result of that, they reached out to Superintendent Cheek about a potential partnership. The Piatt County Health Department will provide services one day a week at the Atwood Hammond Grade School for $8,000. With this in mind and some brief discussion from the board, a memorandum of understanding for counseling services at AHGS through Piatt County Health Department was approved. Other items discussed or voted upon. Scott Gregory, representing the Community Eligibility Program, informed the board about CEP and how it works with school districts. CEP is an alternative way to provide free breakfasts and lunches. It offers a reimbursement from the USDA, but the district has to meet certain income guidelines and a percentage of students that are considered identified students based on income and a variety of household criteria. Cheek explained that CEP was something the district would consider every year, but with regulations and calculations, the district would take about a $10,000 to $12,000 hit per month, which is an amount the district cannot easily absorb. Even though the community is wonderful at giving donations, the district still ends the year with a large bill for unpaid school lunches, Cheek stated. The board will discuss more about this lunch deficit at their meeting in June. Intergovernmental agreement for the Gulf Co-op with Arcola was approved, which has been ongoing since Cheek became superintendent in the district. Changes were made for the district athletic and high school handbook, and they were approved. Fiscal year 25 tentative amended budget was approved. Approved $13,000 in donations. Some of the donations help students with a dress to prom, senior trip, unpaid lunches, and a book vending machine. Cheek informed the board about some of the issues in the facilities at the district. There are some roof leaks at Arthur Grade School, and work is still ongoing for the air conditioning project. There have also been roof leaks at Lovington Grade School, and the fence is in need of repair. The district is currently looking at removing and adding a new fence near the playground area. Cheek has received two quotes so far, $11,000 and $17,000. He plans to meet with Damien from BLDD Architects soon and talk about some of the preventative items and make a presentation to the board about everything that has been done to this point in June. Custodial positions for the district have been listed for a while, but there's been no response. A contract has been secured with a smaller company, which will be discussed at the next meeting. The district will be the company's largest commercial account. And finally, Douglas County Board. County Line Road costs 17% over estimate by Ben Crane. The Douglas County Board approved a resolution for special maintenance of the Moultrie-Douglas County Line Road south of Arthur in the amount of $238,000 from Beniac Construction Company, Incorporated of Tuscola. According to County Engineer Jim Crane, the current figure is 17% over the engineer's estimate, which requires a special hearing. However, the county is able to cover the costs with motor fuel tax funds. We're probably very fortunate we've had a serious mishap. We haven't had a serious mishap up to this point, said Crane while discussing the status of the road to the board. The board also reappointed Kathy Means and Martha Jones to the Board of Review, as well as tabled an agenda item due to pending revisions in the terms. The agreement between the county and the Office of State Pretrial Services was for a lease of the annex. The office wanted the ability to extend the lease 5 years after the 5 years expired. A contract worth $48,000 for 52 weeks with magical cleaning was approved at the recommendation of the Building and Grounds Committee. A committee will also reconvene for the distribution of opioid settlement funds. According to the board member Gary Luth, the fund is back up to over $70,000. The board also approved a $1,000 stipend to employees who completed 60 hours of maintenance credit during each 4-year cycle. We'll move now to the obituaries. Betty Louise Emberton Joan, 95 of Tuscola, passed away Sunday, May 25, 2025. Services will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, May 31st at Hilligoss Schrader Funeral Home, 705 South Main Street, Tuscola, with David L. Jones officiating. Visitation will be held 1 hour prior to the service at the funeral home. Memorials may be made to the Sarah Bush Lincoln Piecemeal Senior Nutrition Program. Marsha L. Smith, 81, of Tuscola, passed away at 7:31 a.m. on Monday, May 19, 2025, at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Funeral services will be held at 1 p.m. on Thursday, May 29th at the Edwards Funeral Home, 221 East Main Street in Arcola. Burial will be at the Arcola Cemetery. Visitation will be held 2 hours prior to the funeral from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Thursday at the funeral home. Diane Hance. It is with great sadness that the family of Diane Smith Hance announced her sudden passing on Thursday, May 22nd, 2025, at the age of 66, with her family by her side. A graveside service will be held at 11 a.m. on Thursday, May 29th at the Tuscola Township Cemetery, 1000 East South Line Road, Tuscola. Memorial donations may be made to the Diana Smith Hence's name to the Douglas County Animal Shelter. John Hoffman. John Wayne Hoffman, 81, of Villa Grove, passed away on Tuesday, May 20th at the Carlinville Area Hospital in Carlinville, surrounded by his family who loved him dearly. John's services will be held Saturday, May 31st at the Joins Funeral Home, 1375 Illinois 130 in Villa Grove. Visitation will be from 10 to 12 noon, followed by a celebration of life service with Pastor Richard Hoffman officiating. A private burial will be held at the Murdoch Cemetery, Murdoch, at a later date. Charles E. Chuck Dewey, 83, of Tuscola, passed away at 10:35 a.m. Wednesday, May 21st, 2025 at Mattoon Rehab and Healthcare Center, Mattoon. Funeral services were held Tuesday, May 27th at the Hilligoss Schrader Funeral Home, Tuscola. Burial was in the Arcola Cemetery with military graveside rites accorded. Visitation was held prior to the service at the funeral home. A luncheon was held at the Ag Center, Tuscola, following the services. George Franklin Logsdon, born on September 30th, 1927 in Fairhope, Pennsylvania, took his final neighborhood stroll on May 5th, 2025 in Foley, Alabama at the grand age of 97. George Franklin Longhorn's legacy is a hole-in-one and a devotion of community and joy. Military and gravesite services will be held at 3:30 p.m. Saturday, May 31st at the Mackville Cemetery at Wood with the Reverend Mike Drake officiating. A time of fellowship and a meal will be held following the service at the Atwood American Legion Post. Gail Lynn Fornshell, 61, of Arthur, went to be with her Lord and Savior on Sunday, May 18th, 2025 at Sarah Bush Lincoln Health Center in Mattoon. A celebration of life service was held Saturday, May 24th at the Arthur Southern Baptist Church with the Reverend Doug Davis officiating. Visitation was Saturday at the church. Schrader Funeral Home Arthur assisted the family with arrangements. The next article, Arthur seeks June 28th parade entries. Entries for Arthur's 2025 Freedom Celebration Parade are being accepted. Individuals, organizations, churches, and businesses interested in participating in the parade should call Stephanie Weirman at 217-620-7460 to request a form or stop by the Welcome Center at 106 East Progress to pick up a form. Hometown Celebration is the theme for the 31st Annual Parade. Sponsored by Area Arthur Association of Commerce, the lineup for the parade will begin at 12:30 p.m. in the Old Progress Tank Facility, 402 East Progress Street, and the parade will begin promptly at 2 p.m. Only parade participants are allowed in the lineup area. Drop-off for parade participants will be at 402 East Progress Street, which is the entrance to the plant. The Freedom Celebration Parade will run west on Progress Street to Vine Street, turns on Vine, and travels through downtown Arthur. The parade route turns left off Vine onto Logan Street, and then left again on Pine Street, and ends back at Progress Street. The Arthur American Legion Post 479 will be handling our American flags along the parade route again this year. People are encouraged to bring their lawn chairs to watch the parade anywhere along the route with their families, friends, and neighbors. Kids and kids at heart, don't forget to bring bags for candy. Parade entries should be reported. Remember to report to the lineup between 12:30 and 1:45 p.m. on June 28th. The next article, Arthur gearing up for annual fireworks. The official 2025 Arthur Fireworks t-shirts are available for purchase in Arthur at Kirby Foods, Dick's Pharmacy, and Yoder's Kitchen. Sizes available from youth small up to adult 3X. This year's fireworks will be held in the evening of Saturday, June 28th in Jurgens Park Fairgrounds. All proceeds from the shirt sales will be donated to the Combat Veterans Motorcycle Association. CVMA. The CVMA is an association of combat veterans from all branches of the United States Armed Forces who ride motorcycles as a hobby. It is their mission to support and defend those who have defended their country and our freedoms. Their focus is to help veterans care facilities provide a warm meal, shelter, clothing, and guidance, or simply to say thank you and welcome home. Priority seating wristbands for Arthur Fireworks go on sale June 2nd. The Arthur Rotary Club said it is excited to be hosting the 2025 edition of the Freedom Celebration Fireworks on June 28th. They hope you're looking forward to it too. Once again, they're selling priority seating wristbands in advance of the celebration. Priority Seatings is in Juergens Park, starting along the lane south of the pool house toward the T-ball diamond on the gravel lot south of the main diamond and in the fenced area on the north side of the football field. Wristbands are available for adults and school-aged children. Seating within the main ball diamond and other areas in Juergens Park is still free. Skip the lines and much of the crowd sitting by sitting in priority. Wristbands go on sale on Monday, June 2nd at First Neighbor Bank, Oye's Hardware, and People's Bank and Trust, all in Arthur. Money from wristband sales allows the Arthur Rotary Club to provide scholarships, support our schools, and help other local organizations that serve our community. Donations toward the fireworks display are always welcome and can be made at the State Bank of Arthur. The next article, Bill Banning Carbon Sequestration Near Muhammad Aquifer Clears the General Assembly. The bill comes after recent leaks at a carbon injection site in Decatur by Jade Aubrey. A bill that bans carbon sequestration over, under, or through the portions of the Muhammad Aquifer passed out of the Illinois General Assembly on Tuesday. The bill has been a point of contention in the State House during this year's legislative session after it was found that a leak occurred during carbon injections carried out by ADM, a Decatur-based agriculture giant. Carbon sequestration is a relatively new technological process that pumps liquefied carbon dioxide deep underground for long-term storage. Proponents said it could help reduce greenhouse gas emissions for high-emissions industries like ethanol production. The ADM injection site, which opened in 2011, received the first federal permit for geologic sequestration of carbon dioxide in 2017. Since then, the project has stored more than 4.5 million tons of carbon dioxide more than a mile underground. Although the leak did not take place in the Muhammad Aquifer area, roughly 8,000 metric tons of liquid carbon dioxide and other ground fluid escaped the area and it was permitted to be in. ADM temporarily paused carbon injections in October after another issue with a well was identified. Muhammad Aquifer supplies water to hundreds of thousands of people in central Illinois. Estimates for the number of Illinois residents served daily by the aquifer range from 500,000 to 1 million people. In 2015, portions of the aquifer in 14 Illinois counties were designated as sole source aquifer by the EPA, since contamination of the aquifer could mean significant public health risk. That EPA designation also indicates that there is no reasonably available alternative drinking water source that could be used if the water in the aquifer were contaminated. Senate Bill 1723 passed on Tuesday with bipartisan support. The bill was spearheaded by Senator Paul Faraci, Democrat of Champaign, and Senator Chapin Rose, Republican of Muhammad. It comes after Illinois lawmakers passed a law last year allowing carbon sequestration anywhere in Illinois. Proposals under consideration by the U.S. EPA today would store 50 times the amount of carbon that has been stored at the ADM facility under the Muhammad Aquifer, Andrew Wren, the climate policy director of Prairie Rivers Network, said during a Senate subcommittee hearing on the bill in March. Last year's bill leaves a critical gap. It says you have to replace drinking water if you damage it through your carbon sequestration activity, and the sole source designation means that there is no alternative. Charles Harvey, a professor at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, spoke on the dangers of carbon sequestration in the wake of the recent ADM leak during the committee hearing. He called the ADM injection facility an experiment, as the injection of carbon at such depth had never been done before. He said the pressure and depth of the injections led to fissures in both the injection pipes and the levels of rocks the carbon was being pumped into and stored under. Since carbon dioxide is a gas, he said it began to seep through the cracks and fissures and rise back to the surface, which began to leak. To do this, it had to move at an alarming velocity of at least 3 meters a day to have reached it to the four months after injection from when the seismic inference was made, Harvey said. Now, the original report predicted that with 90% confidence, this would not happen. Due to the aquifer's sole source designation, bill proponents also argued that the central Illinois residents can't afford the water to be at risk. 85% of the geographic land mass in the state of Illinois can be used for carbon sequestration. The aquifer is a very small piece of that, and it's just kind of the width of central Illinois, Rose said. You can sequester north or south of this without putting anybody's water in jeopardy. Opponents of the bill argued that since the Mahomet Aquifer sits at roughly 200 feet under the surface, it isn't at risk to leaks as carbon injection pump and gas thousands of feet underground. The geology under and around the Mahomet Aquifer is the best geology to ensure that thousands of feet below the aquifer, and we're not talking immediately under the aquifer, we're talking thousands of feet up to a mile below, is the best geology to ensure that the carbon capturing is taking place. Donovan Griffith, the vice president of the Illinois Manufacturers Association, said during the committee, "It's the best part of the state." The bill passed out of Senate in April 50. The bill passed out of Senate in April 55 to nothing. It now awaits approval from the governor after passing out of the House on Tuesday with a vote of 91 to 19. IMA released a statement on X following the passage of SB 1723, urging Governor B. Pritzker to veto the bill. Carbon capture and sequestration is a safe and proven technology that is key to maintaining an economic growth and advancing our state's carbonization goals. We urge Governor J.B. Pritzker to veto this legislation, which discourages investment in clean energy projects, including sustainable aviation fuel, said Mark Densler, president of the CEO of the Illinois Manufacturers Association. The next article, Cancer Spare Specialists of Illinois, HSHS, and Memorial Health unite to celebrate cancer survivors. Join Cancer Care Specialists of Illinois, Decatur Memorial Hospital, and HSHS St. Mary's Hospital as we celebrate National Cancer Survivors Day, an event to honor, encourage, and gather with our local cancer survivors, whether recently diagnosed or in remission for years. Cancer survivors and a guest are invited to Fairview Park on Saturday, May 31st from 1 to 3 p.m. for a meal provided by Notorious P.I.G. and the music from Pizzazz. The event is free and no registration is necessary. It's truly uplifting to see that the event has become a cherished annual tradition for so many cancer survivors, said Jill Andrews, manager, medical imaging services at Memorial Cancer Care Center in Decatur. It's a special moment for reflection, connection, and celebration. This is the fourth year the event has been held outdoors at Fairview Park, with previous events held at the Decatur Conference Center and Richland Community College. Facing a cancer diagnosis can be overwhelming, especially at the beginning, said Valerie Jordan, manager of oncology services at HSSH St. Mary's Hospital. National Cancer Survivors Day offers hope by reminding patients that there is life beyond the diagnosis and treatment. Throughout the event, physicians, healthcare professionals, and volunteers will be available to support survivors and their caregivers. For those of us who care for cancer patients, it's incredibly rewarding to see them living well and thriving, said Perry P. Giulialone, MD, FACP, with Cancer Care Specialists of Illinois. This is one of the highlights of our year. We look forward to it with great anticipation. If you would like more information about attending the event, please call 217-876-4749. Skin Cancer Awareness Month. More than 5 million cases of skin cancer are estimated to be diagnosed each year in the United States, making it the most commonly diagnosed cancer in the country. For Skin Cancer Awareness Month this May, the American Cancer Society, ACS, is shining a light on the fact that nearly all skin cancers can be treated effectively if they are found early. While about 8 of 10 new skin cancer cases are basal cell cancer in Illinois, there will be an estimated 4,200 of new cases of melanoma of the skin in 2025. Skin cancer risk factors are present every day of every season, but they are greater in the summer when the days are longer and the ultraviolet rays are more intense, said Dr. Jennifer N. Choi, professor of dermatology, chief of divisions of Oncodermatology and Medical Dermatology at Northwestern University Feinberg School of Medicine, Robert H. Lurie Comprehensive Care Center. Because of this, it's important to be sun-sensible and to take the necessary steps to lower your risk. Ultraviolet rays are the most common cause of skin cancer, and simply staying in the shade is one of the best ways to limit your UV exposure. While sunlight is the main source of UV rays, artificial sources such as tanning beds also expose people to UV radiation. There's an article on sports commentary. I grew up loving U.S. soccer. It's getting harder to defend. The Sideline Scoop by Ben Crane. Soccer had always been on my radar. From a young age, I played in the rec league and eventually joined a club in Charleston. Charleston Football Club, or CFC for short, sparked a love of the game that's never left me. Naturally, I reached a point where I had to pick a favorite team. Normally, I just adopt whatever team my dad liked. Illinois for college sports, the Chicago Bears for football, the St. Louis Cardinals for baseball. I chose the Milwaukee Bucks for basketball, mostly despite my older brother, a Bulls fan, which in hindsight was the right call. But this time was different. No one in my family supported a professional soccer club. I considered the Chicago Fire, but let's be honest, they were terrible. Then I noticed something. The club I played for, the CFC, shared initials with the Chelsea Football Club. We even wore identical kits. Add the fact that Chelsea was one of Europe's best clubs at the time, and the decision was made for me. Of course, I supported the United States at the international level. I remember that surreal moment when the U.S. beat England 1-1 at the 2010 World Cup and the sting of the round of 16 lost to Ghana. The New York Times summed it up in iconic fashion. USA wins 1-1, greatest tie against British since Bunker Hill. 4 years later, the U.S. got revenge with a group stage win over Ghana in Brazil. The 2014 team, led by Clint Dempsey, Tim Howard, and coach Jurgen Klinsmann, made another run for the round of 16 before falling to Belgium. Back-to-back top 16 finishes gave fans a sense of momentum, especially when considered the roster, mostly MLS players sprinkled with a few stars from Europe's elite leagues. We weren't dominant, but we were scrappy and overachieving. But times changed. The 2018 World Cup qualifiers marked a turning point. That core group from 2010 and 2014 was aging out. The U.S. needed a reset. Instead, it got disaster, failing to qualify after a 2-1 loss to Trinidad and Tobago in 2017. That collapse sent shockwaves. Taylor Twellman, former U.S. striker turned ESPN analyst, delivered a now legendary 7-minute on-air meltdown. The discussion after Brazil was that we can beat the Colombias, the Belgians, and the Argentinas. The world, you're kidding me. We can't beat Trinidad on a field that's too wet and too heavy. What are we doing? Where are we going? His words echoed what every fan was thinking. That night became a national symbol of reckoning, a symbolic moment, and lying on that drenched field in Trinidad was a sobbing 17-year-old named Christian Pulisic. From that heartbreak, a new era was born. Pulisic would lead the most promising generation in the U.S. soccer history. The talent pipeline surged, European clubs started signing American teens, optimism returned. So why am I writing this? Just like last week, Pulisic, now in the face of U.S. soccer, announced he'd skip the national team duty this summer to rest for his club season. Imagine Steph Curry and Kevin Durant committing to the Olympics while LeBron James bows out to preserve his health. It's not unheard of, but it still stings. To be fair, it's not World Cup year, just friendlies, and the Gold Cup, a regional tournament featuring teams from North and Central America, but even at full strength, this team struggles to beat Panama, Canada, and Mexico. Not a good look. The U.S. has more talent now than ever, but not enough hunger. That's the problem. It's infuriating because the U.S. women's team has proved over again and again that we can win on the world stage. They've claimed the World Cup titles 4 times. 4. What's the men's excuse? The country ranks 3rd in global population. Around 2/3 of boys ages 5 to 18 play sports. We dominated the Olympics, 2,636 medals and counting. The next closest, not even including the defunct Soviet Union, is Germany with 974. So how has this U.S. soccer squandered this? We overachieved in 2010 and 2014, then we failed to prepare for what came next. A golden generation arrives, and we hand the reins, perhaps the most underwhelming coach in U.S. MNT history, Greg Berhalter. And when we finally have a chance to pivot, to bring in someone with a real pedigree like Mauricio Pochettino, the players didn't always show the same level of commitment. They prioritize their European clubs over the national teams. At least that's how it looks. Yes, soccer seasons are grueling, and yes, injuries and fatigue are real factors, but representing your country should never feel optional. When your best players skip the national team duty, even in non-World Cup years, it sends a message. To the fans, to younger players, to the rest of the world, and that message right now isn't one of unity or hunger, it's one of disconnection. It's been one slap in the face after another. U.S. Soccer Federation has the money, the population, and the infrastructure, but it's not connecting the dots. That disconnect becomes especially glaring when we look at the smaller nations achieving far more with far less. Croatia, with a population under 4 million, has reached 3 World Cup semifinals and 1 final since 1998. Their success is no accident. It stems from a well-organized, developed pipeline, a clear national identity, and fierce emphasis on technical ability from a young age. Morocco followed a similar formula, becoming the first African team to reach the World Cup semifinals in 2022 by investing in youth academies at home and abroad, uniting domestic talent with players from its European diaspora. And that is all we have time for this week. This is Chris Yerkes. Say goodbye and see you again next week.